You're listening to the Pistol Prose reading series at Pistol Books in Seattle. This is an excerpt from The O Street Girl by Karina Wyckoff from the book O Street on University of Illinois Press, 2007.
The O Street Girl came back to school today. She arrived between the first and second homeroom bells. She'd been absent since last January, and now it was October, and so many things had happened. Things you would have told her once before she was the O Street Girl when she was still your friend. But no one was talking to her today, so you couldn't tell her about your first French kiss, your first hit off a joint, your first fist fight. No one was talking to her, and no one was talking to each other, and so much had happened since she went away. The O Street Girl was what the papers called her because it happened on Oak Street, and because they wanted to protect her identity in the world outside this city. But that was many months ago, and the world outside this city soon forgot her. You almost forgot her, too. You began to blot her from your memory in the way you blotted out other friends of yours who had died. You were 14 years old and not dead. Last Friday, in the back of the Oak Street basketball court, behind the place in the fence where the chain link is most gnarled, Neil Leonard put his tongue into your mouth. You told all your friends about this, about the hard press of his teeth against your lips and how you could taste the pizza he'd eaten for supper. But you did not tell the O Street Girl. And now she was sitting at a desk in the back row with her head pointed toward her lap, and she was wearing a stupid knit hat that covered her ears, and it seemed as if she was trying to hide from you and from everyone else. You met her the way you met all of your friends. She was simply there as you were, and as you'd all always been. Before becoming the O Street Girl, she'd sat on the stoops with you, jumped rope with you, played manhunt on your team. But now it felt like she was a new girl at school rather than someone you'd known since your earliest memories. Over the past many months, you'd begun to forget her, and now she was back and her old name sounded strange, and you noticed that although you and all of your other friends had grown taller and rounder and prettier, somehow she had not. She was always the littlest girl in your clique, a full head shorter than most everyone else. She acted funny and loud, like the littlest girls sometimes do. Of all of your friends, she was not the one it should have been. It should have been Mary, who was busty and shy. Mary's mother was half gone whether she was on smack or off it, and most of the time they didn't seem to live anywhere. They sat on the sidewalks with their stuff in boxes, and old Sicilian men walked past, asking what was for sale. "Vafarti Fergera," you'd heard her mother say, "get lost." Then she'd add, "it's important we keep whatever we have." In their boxes they had a cast-iron skillet, old shoes, and a wooden statue of a frog holding a doctor's bag. Mary's mother named him Henry Mancini. Mary called him Dr. Frog. Or maybe it should have been Darla Santiago, whose father used to own a store before he died, but now who got evicted every month and went with her mother to the basement shelter at the Church of Christ. You used to go there, too, before your mother went straight a year ago and began to sell Avon, and you remembered how it went. You remembered the lukewarm turkey slices, canned peas, and mashed potatoes made from powder. You remembered how the men and women all shared a single room at night, and how once a man in the cot beside yours said, "Come on, pretty girl, come on, while your mama's not looking." Darla wouldn't have been able to say no or fake sleep. Darla, though proud, was not quick to do anything. But the O Street Girl was quick and loud, and her mother knew whole books by heart. Before she was the O Street Girl, she could imitate teachers and boys and rewrite love songs so that their lyrics described farting instead of romance. She said she was clever because her mother was smart. She said she was funny because her mom was nicer than yours. And you had your doubts only once. Once when he went to her apartment and noticed a stinking pile on the floor. "It's from the dog," she said, and cleaned it with newspaper. You didn't think she had a dog, but there was a leash in the corner, so you believed her as much as you worried for her. She was always the littlest girl in your clique, but now you and your friends have grown even taller, and she still has not grown, and the difference between you was even greater and made her look as strange as her old name sounded. She sat at her desk and did not talk to anyone. She looked down as if trying to hide, but she couldn't hide, because she was responsible for the silence that surrounded her and filled the room. You considered waving hello to her, or at least talking to one of your other friends about the idea of waving hello to her, but no one was looking at anyone else, and no one was talking, and you were 14 years old and reluctant to be the first one to do anything. Then the second bell rang, and Mr. Lloyd entered, and he looked at the O Street Girl and said, "Oh, you're back. Good to see you. I didn't know that you were coming back." She didn't look up, and she didn't talk, and Jimmy Plato, who had three fingers on his left hand and had always been teased, started laughing. 10 years from now, she'll tell you how hard it was to come back to the same streets, the same school, to everyone thinking they knew what happened when no one really knew what happened. If she'd had money, she'll say, the relatives she had would have taken her someplace new. But starting fresh is a luxury, she'll tell you, and not everyone can. So she was back in the same school, back with Jimmy Plato, to whom Mr. Lloyd said nothing, back with Mr. Lloyd, who was at least 180 years old, and who, because he had taught every grade level, had taught the O Street girl 3 times before. To the O Street girl, Mr. Lloyd said, "We're beginning now. Remove your cap." She shook her head no. Of all your friends, she was not the one it should have been. Maybe it should have been you. Not now, of course, because your mother went straight. Not now, of course, because your mother served chicken that wasn't raw and pink the way it always was before she learned patience with things cooking. Now your mother even gave you flavored lip gloss from Avon. You wore bubblegum flavor when Neil Leonard first kissed you. He said your lips tasted shiny. "Remove your cap," Mr. Lloyd repeated. "There are no special privileges here." Again she shook her head. And you began to think that perhaps you were wrong, that the O Street girls in the papers was, in fact, someone else, and that this girl, your friend, was hospitalized for cancer, and perhaps beneath her cap she was bald and ashamed. You had known 2 other children with cancer. They wore hats to school, and then they stopped coming to school, and then they were dead. Rosie was the first to die. You remembered the last time you saw her, how her mother carried her down the apartment stairs and into a taxi waiting by the curb. Rosie looked so shockingly small that you forgot to wave goodbye, and your mother, who had not yet gone straight, said, "Her mother's lucky, she'll get her life back." Now, of course, your mother cried whenever she thought about losing you and claimed that something bad in the neighborhood's water poisoned the children to death. And now you thought maybe there was something bad in the water, and maybe your friend was caught between being diagnosed and being dead. But Mr. Lloyd walked to her desk and pulled off her cap, and she had as much hair as ever. It took you a minute to look lower than her hair, to notice that the top halves of her ears were missing. There were the holes and the lobes, but the seashell tops were gone, and in their place were only curled, thick, red nubs. Jimmy Plato started laughing again, and then everyone laughed, and you laughed too, because it was scary to see the strange, curled stumps that used to be ears. Mr. Lloyd dropped the hat on the O Street girl's desk and said, "No caps in class." But you could tell that he wished he'd never said anything.